ladies and gentlemen. Today's opponents on Man versus Train. At the crossing, we have Rick, a 175-pound frustrated man who's running late for work. And on the tracks, we have Bull, a million-pound freight train that takes a mile to stop. Let's see who comes out on top.
You can't beat a train, so don't try. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw, but the Lakers have Uncle P. But unlike Clayton and the Dodgers, who were able to close it out against the Nationals and advance, Uncle P wasn't able to fully bring the Lakers back from the dead. But nobody really cares, because it's the preseason. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by Tommy Alexander. And after five preseason games, I'm starting to get stuck in that preseason malaise, and I'm now just pining for the start of some meaningful NBA basketball. What about you, Tommy?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for it to get started. Let's get going. I'm tired of the preseason.
Seriously, speaking of the Dodgers, were you able to watch the game at all tonight?
I did. I watched a little bit of the game. It was very intense. I'm not really a big baseball fan, but this game was pretty exciting.
Yeah, so, you know, shout out to the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw. Alan couldn't join us today because he was drinking in celebration. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably getting lit on his own. But yeah, so we'll get into the Laker game and everything in just a second. Please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us, because the more you rate and review us on iTunes, that's a second less we tick off of E.G.N. Lian's jump shot release time. So if you want that sucker off quicker, rate and review. So yeah, before we get started on the actual game, obviously the Lakers lost to the Sacramento Kings tonight, 104-116. And D'Angelo Russell had a great game. Before we get into the details of that, I wanted to touch upon a few topics, overarching topics with the Lakers team this year before we get into the NBA regular season. So, Tommy, as you know, Zach August, Travis Ware, and Julian Jacobs were cut the other day. No! Not Travis Ware!
Julian Jacobs, I hardly knew you.
Literally, yeah. So that leaves us with three guys that we have to choose from. That's Meta World Peace, E.G.N. Lian, and Thomas Robinson. Now, initially, because we had penciled, or even not penciled, but penned Swaggy P in to be stretched or waived at a certain point, we thought we would be keeping at least two out of those three guys, right? Now that Swaggy P, Uncle P, is a permanent fixture in our rotation, and maybe even more so, now we're only looking at keeping one of those three guys. So in your opinion, who are we keeping out of Meta World Peace, E.G.N. Lian, the great contract, and Thomas Robinson?
So I think Meta is for sure out. To me, it comes down to, and the reason I say that is because I don't think we necessarily need the veteran leadership in the way that we did last year. We have Dang, we have Mozgov, we have Lou, who's like looking pretty solid. We have Calderon, solid veteran. And somehow Luke has turned Uncle P into a semi-solid veteran. So
yeah.
I just don't think we need the kind of leadership that Meta brings. We need a guy who like theoretically can go out there and play sometimes. Because, you know, we're probably going to, if we carry 15, we'll send Zubats to the D League and probably maybe Anthony Brown as well. So the 13 guys we have are going to see minutes. So for that reason, I think it's going to be Yee or Thomas Robinson. And I think before today, I don't know who I thought was going to get it, but I wanted Thomas Robinson to get the last spot. And I think that's because I think Yee, what I get nervous about with Yee is what is he going to look like when he doesn't play 6-7 games and then comes in and has to play 15 minutes and get us some jump shots. Like, is he good enough to be able to recover from that? I don't know. On the flip side, you know, you have Thomas Robinson, who he's like a nonstop motor. Like, you could not play him for 6 or 7 games. And when you put him in, you know exactly what he's going to give you, which is physicality and offensive rebounding, and energy. That being said, the more I've seen Yee, I mean, we haven't really seen him that much until these last couple games. The more I've seen Yee, I think I would actually prefer him. It helps to have his floor spacing ability for sure. And he's not as bad. He's not as much of a defensive liability as I thought. And, you know, we make fun of his slow release on his jumper, but he showed, especially in tonight's game, that he can get the shot off. And as long as he can get the shot off, like, he does have that weirdly slow release when he shoots threes and stuff, but he has sneakily quick releases also from the mid-range sometimes. So
yeah, it was really random. He got that one buzzer beating shot off and I was like, wait, why was your release so quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was weird.
Yeah. So anyway, so I think as of tonight, I think he's going to get the last spot and I think he probably deserves it.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, you would want Thomas Robinson to have the contract that E.G. Anlian had, so you don't even have to make a tough decision. But the fact of the matter is, E.G. Anlian provides, I mean, regardless of how silly he looks out there sometimes, because obviously when he looks bad, he looks absolutely terrible. Like when he gets blocked by other guys and he looks super weak and you're just like, oh, this guy looks like a clown sometimes, a 7-foot Chinese clown, kind of like Huertas when he was like struggling last year and doing weird stuff. When he looks bad, he looks terrible. But at the same time, if you look at the overarching scope of his game, he's actually not that bad. You know, he's able to do some positive things, like set really good screens and then pop out and be able to hit a jump shot here and there. He's obviously not as athletic as we thought or as we saw in the Olympics, but at the same time, I think he's still working his way back into the NBA and trying to get the flow and timing of things down. With that being said, I think he's going to make the team as well. And mostly, not so much because of the on-court stuff, but it's clear that the last two games, Luke has really given him a lot of minutes, and that would lead me to believe he's going to be part of the rotation. But also more so for the contract, obviously. We're going to keep going over this contract over and over again, because at the end of the day, if you attach E to any guy, it's just going to bolster their trade value. So if everybody wants Lou Will gone at a certain point this season, putting E.G. Anlian's contract with packaging it with Lou Will is going to make him all that more attractive. So I think they're going to keep him there. And then at the same time for the on-court play, he just gives a different dimension that none of our other bigs can give us right now. Unless Larry Nance learns to continue to be aggressive and starts hitting jump shots and threes at a very consistent level, which I don't think is coming anytime soon yet. Right. So yeah, he just adds a different dimension that we don't have from that center power forward.
And he just right like, now. I mean, you might have touched on this a little bit just now, but he, you know, at some level, you just need guys with size. He looks like very physically imposing. You know, this guy is like a legit 7-foot. He looks like a giant out there. So that's kind of height and length. You can't really teach that. So as much as I like Robinson's intensity and I wish he would get a chance to develop here, he just makes too much sense, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he didn't rebound the ball at all tonight. He had zero rebounds, but the prior few games that he played, he was able to rebound the ball okay. So with that said, let's move on. So today we're actually going to have a call-in question from a listener and fan. So this is kind of exciting. So Tommy, I'm going to let him speak, and I'll let you take this answer, and I'll give my thoughts as well. So this is from Joshua Park.
Hey guys, big fan of your podcast. So my question is the following. As we all know, Coach Luke has been using Jordan Clarkson as a sixth man during the past two preseason games. Just from my own observation, I noticed that this move has helped solidify our bench. I think at one point during the Nuggets game, our bench scoring was a plus 22 in comparison to the Nuggets bench. Hence, just wanted to get your thoughts on whether having Clarkson as a sixth man would be a viable option this season. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Joshua Park. Were you able to hear that okay?
I was, yeah.
All right. So what do you think, Tommy? Jordan Clarkson, six men off the bench. That's what we've seen the last five games. Luke actually intimated that he's probably going to shake things up in Saturday's game. But yeah, what do you think about Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench to start the regular season and so on and so forth?
So first of all, I don't know if we know that for sure he's going to come off the bench. And I guess that sort of gives you a hint as to what my opinion is, which is I do not think he should be coming off the bench. I think that Luke, there's been all this talk of like, oh, Luke, you know, when he talks about Clarkson, he references Lamar Odom and Iguodala and such, you know, whoever. The problem is we don't have Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum, right, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, et cetera. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
we are in a situation where we need our five best players to start, or else we have a very bad chance of getting off to really slow starts. Jordan Clarkson is, given what he's shown this preseason in terms of his improved jumper, his improved strength, and his like supremely improved defense, he is way better than Lou Williams right now. You know what I mean? Like, Lou Williams is a career sixth man type. You expect him to be one of your top two bench players on your team. He could be a top two bench player on like a pretty good team. But Jordan Clarkson is like, the way he's playing is like legit NBA starter. You know what I mean? And that guy needs to get the minutes. To me, I know they always talk about like, okay, well, it doesn't matter who starts, it's who closes. And Clarkson gives us, you know, solid bench production. And I don't know. I just think that Brandon Ingram is the number two pick in the NBA draft. And so far, we haven't seen anything. He hasn't even scored double digits once in the five games that he's played in. You know, tonight's game was actually the only game he looked somewhat passable as an NBA player. But over the course of the season, he's going to get better. I expect Larry Nance to assert himself more over the course of the season. We have Nick Young, who's emerged, who's shown that he can give some bench scoring punch. And Lou Williams can give some bench scoring punch too. You know what I mean? So I think our bench unit is going to be able to, you know, run the offense and get buckets. And we have guys who can shoot coming off the bench. So that's going to help too. And it's going to be much more staggered during the regular season than it is during the preseason, where Luke is trying to run five man groups at a time to see what works. So for all of these reasons, I think you have to start Clarkson. He's your best shooting guard. And him starting next to D'Angelo, you know, it's not like we have so much scoring in the starting five that we need to bench one of those two. You know, Julius Randle, he is going to be maybe a 10 to 12 like he was last year, because I think he's going to do a lot more playmaking and focusing on setting screens and other stuff this season. Luol Deng is not really a scorer. Timothy Mozgov is not really a scorer. It's D'Angelo and Clarkson are going to do the bulk of the scoring, and the other guys are pretty much going to score through the flow of the offense.
Right.
And I don't think they'll have any problem coexisting. In fact, I think D'Angelo looked his best when Clarkson was out there. I mean, D'Angelo played really well the entire game, but I thought he looked even better when he was out there with Clarkson. So for all those reasons, I think you have to start Clarkson, and I hope that, I think on Saturday, Luke, like, he hinted that he might make a change in the starting lineup, and I think it's pretty obvious that that's what he'll try to do on Saturday and see how that works.
Right. And, you know, to Joshua's point, it is true that whenever Jordan Clarkson has come onto the floor with the bench unit, he's done a really good job leading that unit and helping that unit really get into the flow of things. And every time he's come in, he's averaged like, you know, 15 to 18 points. Tonight he had 18 points off the bench. But at the same time, if you notice, the starting lineup has not gotten off to good starts. So if you just flip that around and put Clarkson in with the starting unit, you wouldn't have that problem. So, of course, the bench unit is going to look better because Clarkson is on there. But it would also be great to have them be on a good footing right from the start. So yeah, I agree with you. At the end of the day, Clarkson's going to be able to space the floor better than Lou Will does as it is, because he's, you know, 3 for 7 tonight from three. I think him and Russell play well together, like you said. I think, you know, Zach Lowe had that article talking about how one of the main concerns that Luke Walton probably has is he doesn't really necessarily probably want to pair Lou Will with Jose Calderon or Lou Will with Marcelo Huertas coming off the bench, right? Because that would be a terrible defensive unit. But something that we talked about was, well, at the end of the day, it kind of doesn't matter because these are bench players and they're not going to be playing 30 minutes, 25 minutes anyways. So you can live with that, especially if Brandon Ingram and Larry Nance are coming off the bench with you. Mm-hmm. And as it is, Lou Will is creating problems in the starting lineup anyways. It's not like defensively he's terrible regardless of whether he's starting or coming off the bench.
Yeah, he's horrendous.
So I agree with you that, you know, the six man stuff is great when you have a more established veteran type team.
Exactly.
Who has that structure around them. Right now we don't have that structure, and we're hoping Clarkson can provide that structure, and then we'll see who our six man of the year is. So yeah, I agree with you. It would be best if eventually Clarkson just was the starting shooting guard along with D'Angelo Russell. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where we'll leave it.
The only thing, and you touched on this a little bit, but the only thing I just wanted to add is I understand the fear of going to and people have written about this. I think Zach Lowe had mentioned this in his thing about Clarkson needs to start in that article. That was Zach Lowe, right? That article you sent around. So I get that there's this fear about starting or putting Calderon and Lou Williams in the backcourt together because they're just going to get torched theoretically. But I think there are ways around it. I think you can stagger your lineup so that, you know, Calderon only plays 12 minutes. Lou Williams has been playing like 20 plus in the preseason. Maybe you bring him down to 18 or so and you stagger it so that like maybe Clarkson plays the entire first quarter and then D'Angelo is the first sub out and you bring in Calderon. And then when the second quarter starts, you bring D'Angelo back and then you bring Lou in to replace Clarkson. You know, I think there are ways to work around it and stagger your lineup so that you minimize the time where you have Lou and Calderon out there together.
Yeah, and I think even if you want to keep this Jordan Clarkson leads the bench unit out there, then you can start Jordan Clarkson for the first 6 minutes, then put Lou Will in to finish the first quarter, and then Clarkson will be leading the bench at the start of the second. So it would essentially be the same thing, except we'll just get off to better starts and have that chemistry between Russell, Lou Will, and Randall. Yep. And they'll still be flanked by Luau Deng and Timofey Mozgov, so it'll be fine. So yeah, that's pretty much where we'll leave it at. We hope that Jordan Clarkson will eventually start. Lou Will can get kind of annoying. So yeah, so thanks again to Joshua Park for sending that MP3. If you want to send a question of your own or just a topic or discussion, please send us a short 30-second to a minute MP3 to thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. All right, with that said, let's get on with like a summary of the game, tonight's game against the Kings, our second time playing them this preseason. You know, D'Angelo Russell vowed that after getting schooled by Damian Lillard that he would take things seriously, and he got a bit of humble pie, but he's ready to rebound, and that's exactly what he did today. Somehow he had 11 assists. We were talking about it. He had 31 points.
I have 11 no idea assists. How that happened. I like did not perceive that during the game. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it happened mostly in the second half, mainly the third quarter where he was doing everything.
No, go ahead, sorry.
It's 10 for 14 from the field, 5 for 6 from 3, 6 for 7 from free throw, 2 steals, only 2 turnovers. This might be an even better game than that Nuggets game that we call the perfect game from D'Angelo, because he was doing everything tonight. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of that, what did you think of the overall game? Because the Kings shot 58%. Field goals. They made 13 threes. Luckily the Lakers shot 46% and hit 14 threes. So that wouldn't have happened under Byron Scott. We probably would have lost by 30 in this game. But I think my overall thoughts on just the offense and defense of this game was defensively, this is probably one of their worst games, especially guarding the perimeter. At a certain point, once they found out that they had to start contesting Tolliver's shots, he was already way too hot to even contain, and he was just hitting threes in people's faces, kind of like Damian Lillard. And the whole night, it was pretty much Tolliver, Jordan Farmar, like Rudy Gay. These guys were just hitting threes all over the place. And I think defensively, you know, I know the Lakers' plan or their scheme right now is to stop penetration and to help whenever a guy drives, but I think that left too many wide open perimeter players where the Lakers had to lunge out and try and contest and get, they were out of position for the most part tonight. And Luke Walton mentioned that on an energy level, this was probably their worst game of the preseason. So I think at the end of the day, defensively is where they broke down and not being able to contain the outside perimeter shots of the Kings. What did you think of the game?
Pretty much the same things you said. The defense was horrendous. Anthony Tolliver is hilarious to me. I don't know if you ever watched Chappelle's Show, but he reminds me of like Ashy Larry. Like, wait, do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't know. I don't think so. Why?
Anyway, he's just like, something about him reminds me of Ashy Larry. But anyway, he is just like this random dude who I feel like has been in the NBA for 10 years. And like every year I'm like, how is this fool still in the NBA? And he just comes in and rains threes randomly.
Yep. Do you remember that one year when we were pursuing him as a free agent? There was one summer where we were pursuing him as a free agent because he did really well with the Golden State Warriors. But yeah, this guy is a prototypical stretch four. And I just looked up Ashy Larry's picture, and you're right. This is Anthony Tolliver.
But so I thought the defense was just horrendous, and I don't know if that was. I mean, look, I don't want to make too many assumptions because obviously I'm not there, but these guys were in Vegas. They're young guys. They like to have fun. I know not all of them are old enough to go out to like the clubs, I guess, actually, which is kind of interesting, but presumably they were having fun and like partying and hanging out with each other. And, you know, I don't know if you follow, if anybody follows any of these dudes on Twitter and stuff, like Jordan Clarkson is like tweeting at like 1 a.m. I love this team and stuff like that. And like, you know, they were probably out and drinking and having fun, you know, which is fine. It's preseason. Like, don't take it so seriously. But I think it really showed if that's what happened, because I thought their energy was not bad in like very short stretches. Yeah. But overall game energy, it was just like offensively, besides when they went on that hot, like that hot streak in the third quarter, they were just like going through the motions and they were just like, it looks so forced. I mean, it still sadly looks so much better than Byron Scott's offense, but right. It didn't look as good as it has looked.
Well, in the second quarter, I was going to say there was a stretch where it looked the most Byron Scotty, where Luau Deng would try and go one-on-one. Like, Lou Will would go one-on-one. D'Angelo would go. I was like, whoa, what is happening? What happened to, like, the movement? There was a lot less, like, off-ball movement by all the guys and a lot more standing. And I was like, oh, this is foreign to me all of a sudden after seeing four games of the guys really hustling to get to different spots and trying to make things happen. And then, obviously, the third quarter happened, and that's when they started had a little more juice, but you're right. The offense was kind of stagnant in the first half. And then defensively, you know, there were times obviously where they're still hustling and contesting shots. I think the biggest thing for me this year is like, no matter how tired they are, they're always still going to try and contest the shot, which is what I'm proud of them for doing. But at the same time, like just kind of losing their man out in the perimeter was like a constant tonight. And then, you know, Darren Collison should never be shooting 8-for-13 from the field. He had 20 points, 8-for-13, 7 assists. What's Ben McLemore doing with 6 assists? I'm so confused by this box score. It like makes no sense. Tonight was just weird defensively. We'll chalk it up to one, the Lakers' energy not being there, and also the Kings just getting ultra, ultra hot. I don't think they've ever shot 58% in their lives. That is such a weird percentage to me. 58% from the field and 62% from three-point land. But, you know, I will give it up to the Lakers in the third quarter for actually showing some resiliency, and that was mainly driven by D'Angelo Russell just literally doing everything from posting up, hitting turnaround jumpers, to driving it into the lane, to a lot of really good two-man pick-and-roll game with Julius Randle. And then, you know, once the bench came in, he also got Brandon Ingram involved for that baseline whip pass to him at the three-point line, Brandon Ingram hitting that three. So that third quarter was really good, and I think that's all I have to say about the general arc of the game. What did you think about D'Angelo Russell tonight?
Oh my God, this fool is so good. When he's playing like this, dude, it's like, now we've played 5 preseason games, and basically the first game was the first game, and he didn't play that much. But so if you take that one out, he's played like amazing in 3 of the 4 games. And even in the one where he shot bad, I thought his overall play was not so bad.
The shots were good.
The shots were good. He was just missing wide open shots. Like, he missed so many wide open shots, and that's just going to happen sometimes. Steph Curry misses, you know, has games where he misses a ton of wide open shots, but if he can keep up this like 75% of the time he plays this well, I'm sure this won't happen during the season with this high of a frequency, but he just makes it look so effortless. I don't know about you, dude, but like whenever he shoots, I honestly have no clue if it's going in or not going in, because it looks like he's playing so haphazardly, like so carefree, and he makes it look so easy. But like when it works, it like makes him look like such a devastating player. 31 points, 11 assists, 2 steals. He played great defense in the game tonight, too. And he only had 2 turnovers, which to me was the huge thing. He doesn't need to get 31 and 11 every night. If he can get like 20 points and 5 assists, that's going to be more than anyone could have ever expected this season.
Well, speaking of which, that's exactly what he's averaging in the 5 games. He's averaging 20 points, 2 rebounds, 4.6 assists, 1.8 steals on 50% from the field and 40% from 3.
Exactly. If he puts up anything close to that, it's preseason, but if he comes close to that in the regular season, maybe you could lower his percentages a little bit as teams adjust, but it's going to be really scary. This guy is, I'm shocked at how good he got so fast. Like, let us not forget when the season started last year, this fool looked about as effective as Brandon Ingram currently looks. He couldn't do anything. I think there was one game, like the last preseason game, he scored 13 points or something. And we were all like, oh, yeah, he finally did it. So he looked like really, really bad for the first like I want to say almost half of the season last year.
Well, he was so tentative that people were wondering whether this guy had any fire beneath him. Because
I don't know. I thought like maybe we fell into that category unfairly last year a little bit at certain points, but I think overall we were always like, you know, he's feeling it out. He's not like a flashy. I mean, he's a flashy player, but he's not like a strong, assertive Kobe Bryant to go out there and just assert his will no matter what. He's just going to feel it out and see and let the game come to him. And I think this year the game has come to him and he's looked amazing so far.
Well, he looks like he's playing in Ohio State again, and that confidence and swagger is back. And I've never seen, outside of Kobe, I don't remember another Laker being able to really just have that feeling in his wrist and fingers that when he's getting hot, it's almost like whenever.
Oh my God, it just like anything he touches is going to go in.
Yeah, like those, it almost seems like he shoots that like put shot where he just flings it really quickly better when he's like super hot. I expect those to go in now. Like he shot that 35 footer, like it's like a Steph Curry shot and it went in, and he's done that in the Brooklyn game before and in the Philadelphia summer league game. You know, whenever he has it going, I expect those like quick release shots to go in no matter where he's shooting it from the floor, almost Damian Lillard like. So he was devastating tonight, and it wasn't just from the three-point line. You know, he was posting up and abusing Darren Collison and Jordan Farmer in the post, hitting turnaround jump shots. He was playing scrappy D on Aaron Aflalo as well, so that was great to see. And then I really liked his, when he got the steal and Willie Cauley-Stein was running with him, and he was like, I'm going to run faster than you. I was like, oh, you can do that? Willie Cauley-Stein is like super athletic. He's like DeAndre Jordan.
He just exploded past Cauley-Stein and then finished super strong. Like, I feel like if that was last year, he would have got packed so hard. He would have gotten scared and just like, it would have been a chase down block, like 95%.
No, yeah, totally. So he was just this was like a perfect game for D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, I think in the first half it was mostly his scoring. He had 16 points, and we didn't really see any of the passing come into play. But I'm glad that happened in the second half, especially with Julius Randle. Like, he had a really good two-man game going with Julius Randle. You know how I told you I went to the last game with Pete Zayas, and like every play down he would tell me exactly what the Lakers were running, and then if the defense countered, they transitioned to like a plan B set, and he'd tell me what the plan B was. And so that was really helpful. There was one particular play in the third quarter where D'Angelo Russell was posting up high, and then Julius Randle comes in to try and set a screen, but he slips immediately, and then D'Angelo Russell like slipped a really sneaky pocket pass to Randle for like the lay-in, and that was a really great two-man game to see. I think that's when the offense really started going flowing. So speaking of Randle, you know, he took a while to get back into the flow of things. You know, he was only 3 for 9, but he did have 10 rebounds and 5 assists, and the shots that he did make, I mean, his body control this year is so much more improved.
So much better, dude. It's like two completely different players.
Yeah. So I'm really impressed by that from him. And obviously in transition, I mean, he had that one play where he was trying to dribble around too much with the ball and Darren Collison stripped him. But outside of that, for the most part in transition, there's a lot more surveying of the floor and slowing down his dribble and looking around for people. He'll still miss people here and there wide open, but more so than last year, he's just being a lot more patient and just reading the floor better in general. So I've been really impressed by that. You know, the 4 turnovers isn't great, but overall, I've just seen a lot of improvement from Randle. The jump shot still hasn't shown itself, but as long as he keeps being assertive in that area, I think it'll eventually come. Any other thoughts on Randle?
So this is what I was really hoping. Pretty much Randle has exactly met my wildest imagination of what he would look like in this system. I mean, like you said, the big thing with him is the jump shot still isn't there. I think it overall, when he's taking wide open shots that he has time to like set his feet, I think you can see that he clearly worked on it. Like, it looks better than last year. But I would by no means rely on this fool to hit even like consistently corner of the free throw line jumpers. That being said, I think this guy is going to shoot 50% this year because Luke has gotten it into his head to like only take high percentage shots. That's number one. And number two, his body control and finishing around the rim, like you said, it looks so much better. It's not quite when we talked about when we watched like Ben Simmons play, but it's getting up to that, you know, it's like moving in that direction. And that's really what you want to see, because Ben Simmons hits some like really weird looking shots, but like he does it because his body control is so good in the paint. And I think Julius Randle is finally getting to that point. You know, I think, again, I was always the one who said, I think people are being a little bit too harsh because I think he's more raw than people expected. And if he continues to progress at this rate, I mean, I still think he falls asleep too much on defense, especially as a help defender. But
yeah,
I think his five assists, like I think this guy can easily average around four assists, you know, double digit rebounds and double digit points, which how many power forwards in the NBA can do that? And he's only 21. So,
right. Granted, three of those assists were to a very, very hot, swaggy P, but, you know, Randle has been doing a really good job in transition, finding open three-point shooters, where in the past he would just barrel into dudes and just take it himself. So, you know, it's been really great seeing Julius progress in this way. Obviously, he's still going to have his moments where he gets stuffed or he does his weird Tasmanian devil barreling into dude stuff, but at the same time he's able to contort his body a lot better these days and just softly lay it in and show more finesse and skill. So that's been great to see. I guess moving on, let's just shift to Jordan Clarkson tonight. He had 18 points on 7 for 12 shooting, 3 for 7 from 3. Just always continually so solid and under control. He had another and one play where he got hit pretty hard and he was still able to finish, and once again just showing his strength that he's been able to add over the summer. He's added 15 pounds or so, and it started, you can really see it in the way he's not afraid of contact anymore, where in the past he would just finesse lay it in and almost contort his body to not get the contact, but now he's actually seeking it out and he's getting to the foul line and getting and one. So I thought Jordan Clarkson played pretty well again tonight. What did you think?
Yeah, Clarkson, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I mean, his defense is just relentless. You know what I mean? It's like literally all he had to learn was angles and how to approach the floor defensively. It's like literally nobody ever taught this guy how to do this. And one guy taught him for 3 weeks how to do it. And now he's like one of the best defenders on our team, it feels like. So yeah, I'm like really impressed by him. I'm frankly shocked that he's not been more vocal about wanting to start. I mean, I realize that that's a good quality to have in a player. Like you could plug him in any position and any spot on the floor at any time of the game and he won't complain. But Clarkson is like so much better than Lou Williams, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That he really deserves that starting spot. And I think he's sort of let his game speak for himself. You know, Lou is going to have those random games where he drops 25. The thing is, he can do that on the bench.
Yep.
So I think you need to have Clarkson starting because he's more consistent. For every game Lou drops 25, you know he's going to have three consecutive where he shoots three for 11. So,
yep.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by Clarkson, and I like what I've seen with his consistency.
Yeah, so this is going back to just the overall arch of the game offensively, but I think one thing, even when we have some stagnant moments, I think one thing that I really like about this offense, and in transition, the guys are whipping the ball around so quickly. Like, they had that one play where Jordan Clarkson was running the break, and then he passed it quickly to Larry Nance. Larry Nance passed it out to Jose Calderon for three, and Jordan Clarkson repositioned himself on the baseline, and Calderon shot the pass to him, and he hit the three on the baseline. So I just really like how there's so much ball movement, and the read and react passes are happening really well from everybody on the court, especially in transition, and you just see the ball zipping and whizzing past dudes, and it's just beautiful basketball to watch. I mean, it's normal basketball, but we didn't see any of this last year, you know?
For years.
No, seriously. So I really like that from tonight. And let's move on to Brandon Ingram. So this is the first game where he seemed in control. He actually looked like Brandon Ingram from Duke, starting with that, you know, pump fake from the top of the key from the three-point line and taking Rudy Gay all the way in and contorting his body for his patented, like, stretch lefty layup that he always used to do at Duke. And I think that got him his confidence going from there, and he was able to hit a three-pointer after that, and then obviously the baseline three-pointer from D'Angelo Russell in the third quarter. And outside of that, obviously, just continual solid defense from him as well on the other end. So what did you think of Brandon Ingram tonight?
Yeah, I thought he looked solid. He's typical rookie, you know what I mean? Like 19-year-old rookie nonetheless, but he's so quiet on the floor, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't really make his presence felt yet, and I think that's just because he's so young. You know, every time I get like an inkling, like maybe this team will just shock the world and, you know, go 500 this season, or win, you know, even win 35 games. Watching Brandon Ingram play sort of reminds me why that's probably not going to happen. I mean, the way we've seen Randall develop and Clarkson develop and Russell develop, it's been so amazing, but it took time. And Brandon Ingram is eventually going to be probably our second best player, if not our best player overall. And he might get there as soon as next year. But I think this year you're going to see a lot of these, like, even when he gets 28 minutes like he did tonight, 3 for 7. Like, how do you only take 7 shots if you're going to play 28 minutes and you're like, you know, you're drafted as a scorer? Just a couple rebounds, like, wasn't really a factor too much defensively. I do like that offensively he looked much more confident. He was asserting himself. There was these random clips of him shooting threes in the pregame warmups, or like the shoot around this afternoon, and he got a shot. The 1-3 he hit looked like he was in the same spot from that video this morning. So I was happy to see that, like, he's trying to translate his confidence from these practices into games, because right now he's sort of playing with no confidence. But yeah, I think he definitely looked better offensively in this game than he has looked. But he's got a long way to go for sure.
Yeah, I think the good thing though is that he's not going to hurt you when he's out there on the floor, because he's been a net positive on defense. So if he's not doing anything on the offensive end, it's fine, because he's not killing you on the other end as well. And yeah, you know, he's just an unassuming guy who's not going to take the reins of the offense, and he's just going to feel the game out. You know, he had 2 assists. One of those assists was a bullet pass to D'Angelo Russell in the paint, and D'Angelo Russell was able to lay it in. So this guy is just smart, but he's still feeling his way into what he can and can't do. But you see that, I mean, you've seen it, the times when he's like, okay, I'm going to take this myself, and there's actually some assertiveness and intentionality to it. That's when he looks like the Brandon Ingram we knew, right? It's just few and far between right now, because he's wondering whether he can do that. So, but the times that he has shown aggression, I've liked it, and it seems like the Duke Brandon Ingram's in there somewhere. It's just he's just feeling himself out, really. Any other thoughts on any other guys that we didn't talk about tonight? Nick Young, obviously. I thought Nick Young should have played more, obviously. But once he got in, he scored 3 straight 3-pointers, and again, man, his defense is so good, dude.
His defense is like better than Brandon Ingram's right now.
No, it is. It's better than anybody on the team. I'm not even joking. Like, the way he's able to body up like Rudy Gay, and he's contesting every single shot. I've never seen this type of Swaggy P intensity before.
People forget that Swaggy P, I mean, first of all, he's a veteran, so he's just got that like veteran strength, but he also has a 7'1" wingspan. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason this guy should have been this bad of a defender his entire career. And it just took Luke Walton, like the random scrub whisperer, to like come to him and be like, hey, as long as you play defense, you can do whatever the hell you want on offense, because we know you could shoot threes and you're really damn good at shooting threes. And he gave him that confidence. And I don't know if Swaggy's going to be like an actual, like, what his exact role in the rotation is going to be, because I feel like we haven't seen what the exact rotations are going to be yet. But if he can play 12 minutes a game and hit you 2 or 3 threes in that time, what else could you really ask for? You know, like, the Warriors had tons of guys like that who would, like Barbosa, I think people think of Barbosa for the last 3 seasons with the Warriors, and they were like, oh yeah, Barbosa, he played so great. And then you look at his stats and they weren't that amazing. It's just that the coach knew, or Steve Kerr knew how to put him in at the exact right moments to get exactly what you needed out of him and then take him out of the game. Right. So he shot like career high percentages because he was playing such few minutes. He, you know, was only taking a few shots, but he was taking high percentage shots that were tailored to him. And I think the same thing is going to be true with Swaggy. He might shoot career high percentages across the board this year, but average like lower points than he did that Mike D'Antoni year just because he's only playing in burst minutes to, you know, do what he can do, what he does best, and then get out of there.
Yeah. Swag, you know, it's funny because I was talking to Pete after the game, and he was just saying it's going to be interesting to see how the rotation shakes out, just because he said, you know, objectively, Swaggy P is better than Brandon Ingram just because he's a veteran and he can score better and he can actually defend better. But how he's not sure right now how the minutes are going to shake out, because you are going to have to give Brandon Ingram at least 18, 20, 25 minutes and just bite the bullet for his development. But at the same time, Luke Walton's really going to have to balance out how to win games and how to also give Brandon Ingram some developmental minutes, because they're essentially playing the same position. I mean, this is looking too far ahead and this is too hypothetical, but the ideal scenario would be eventually you find a package for Lou Will and E and you ship them out, and then Nick Young just assumes that spot or takes over that spot, really, because he's so much better than Lou. And if he was the one starting with D'Angelo Russell, this might be a tougher question in terms of, yeah, you know, maybe have Jordan Clarkson off the bench, because Swaggy P has learned how to just catch and shoot, and he's not doing his one-on-one dribbling exhibition stuff as much as before. And he's actually passing the ball and playmaking and actually fitting into the system. So when that happens and he's playing defense, he almost turns into like the perfect shooting guard, you know, kind of like how J.R. Smith is for the Cavs. So, it's crazy. His redemption, the Uncle P redemption, and he's going to make the team which is shocking. A crazy turnaround. Shocking. I know. Any other thoughts on anybody else or the rest of the game?
I'm trying to think. I mean, just briefly, Dang looked a little rusty still.
Yeah. He did have 9 points and 6 rebounds.
He looked better than he looked in the last game, but I think his, in terms of how he, again, it's hard for me to judge because they got off to such a stagnant start. A lot of his misses were in the first quarter when like it looked like he just had no idea where he was supposed to be in the offense. But it's hard to say how much of that was his fault, how much of that was somebody else's fault, because he just hasn't played that much with the starting lineup, and they've all played with each other a ton. But it was good to see him just continue to get minutes.
I think the play calling has been really good by Luke. When he realizes that things are stagnant, he'll call like a timeout, and then the play after that will be like, I think this is the second straight game where Jordan Clarkson had a lob pass to him where he was like, I guess, trying to post up, but then he like spins, and then it's almost like that Kobe lob where Jose Calderon just leads him to the basket and he's able to like lay it in or dunk it in. And then Jose Calderon had a really nice pick and roll with Larry Nance as well for like an alley-oop, so that was great. And I think something that I observed and something that Pete told me during the game was that, and I talked about it with Alan the last podcast, but this year, as opposed to last year, where in Byron Scott's offense, whenever they'd run a play, the minute that play died, it was over for them.
And there was no counter,
They're going straight to ISO ball. This year, it's like there's a plan B counter to run a different set or to move guys in a different way, and sometimes there's even a plan C after that. Like the ISO ball chuck shot is like the absolute last scenario, and rarely do they ever get into like a 5 second thing.
It's so insane to me how that they take those ISO shots so rarely. Like when it happens, I'm like, oh wow, that's weird, like that normally doesn't happen. Whereas last year it was like they take these horrible ISOs and it went in, and I was like, all right, I guess it worked. But it's just insane how fast they picked it up. And you said like, oh, they have, you know, they have their A option, but they also have a B option and maybe sometimes C. I think the ultimate goal of this offense is, it's not even going to be ABC. It's literally infinite. You know what I mean? It's just the constant countering offense, and you're supposed to read. That's what read and react is. Whatever the defense does, you react to it. So I think that they're definitely, it's definitely really fun to watch.
I think the guys are just getting a hang of really making quick passes and quick decisions, but also at the same time moving to the right spots. And there's no one better right now than D'Angelo Russell actually off ball. You know, they always do that thing where he like passes the ball and then he sprints all the way to the other side of the court because he knows Randall and Mozgov are going to like screen guys off once he's in the proper position. Like, it's a beautiful thing to watch them. It's in a very intentional play. I think Russell had that play where he like sprinted again to the other side of the baseline and Lou Will hit him for a pass for a wide open three, but that that was wide open because Timofey Mozgov screened their both of their guys out, and D'Angelo Russell was perfectly open. And last year, you didn't see any of that action. That required four different people doing the stuff
exactly.
Correctly.
Yeah, it's like insane when you watch when they're like really getting their rhythm going. Like sometimes, I feel like in the first like three games, especially maybe the first four, even when they were like, it was still fresh excitement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they start the game off and they're like really executing the offense because they want to learn. It's very startling to watch how like effective it is, because you see it's like this crazy maze of guys just running in every direction, but they're all like playing off of each other and it works perfectly and like nothing's really telegraphed. It's just really nice. I think another thing that has really, really shocked me is I think every game we've played so far, and I can't really remember the stats for the first game, but I'm pretty sure every game we've played so far, we've ended with less turnovers than our opponent. Mm. Which is like, you know, we played tonight, we had 12 turnovers.
But the Kings had 17.
And the Kings had 17. We only had 13 in the last game. Portland had 20. So the fact that we're keeping our turnovers this low, this early in the preseason, like preseason teams are turning it over 20 times a game, it feels
yeah.
like. And we've had two in like the low teens at least. I mean, I don't even remember before that. But so I'm pretty surprised that they're keeping the turnovers that low. Every game you're going to have a guy who just gets four. Like tonight it was Randall, but this was the worst game he's had for turnovers. Sometimes it'll be Russell. But he's your point guard, you know? So sometimes you're just going to have random guys who do that, but it's nice to see, dang, zero turnovers. Mozgov, although he's initiating a lot and setting a lot of picks, only one. Lou Williams, zero. You know, yep. Clarkson, zero. So, or two only. So I think all that has been really good to see. Although we've lost a couple of these games in a row, and we're going to Golden State, so we might lose two more in a row and leave, unless Kerr throws us a bone in one of those. It's the signs have been very, very encouraging so far.
Yeah, and even a guy like Lou Will, who we're mostly annoyed at for the most part, he's actually been one of our most effective pick-and-roll playmakers, especially with Mozgov. He always seems to find Mozgov at the right places,
yep.
And somehow D'Angelo Russell can't do the same whenever he plays pick-and-roll with Mozgov. I don't know why, Lou Will is always able to lob it to Mozgov or throw a perfect pocket pass or like a shovel pass, and Mozgov always finishes off of Lou Will's passes, so even the guys who you would presumably always normally be annoyed at have bought into this system and are actually playing better. Obviously, you'd hope Lou Will would stop shooting 3-for-11 and whatnot, but yeah. At least he's passing the ball in playmaking as well. And
And I think we talked about this when we were getting a little bit nervous before the season started, or like during the offseason, I should say. And mm-hmm. we were saying, like, you know, Lou, is it reasonable for us to expect that a guy who's played a certain way his entire career, and he's like a legit veteran who's won Sixth Man of the Year, is it reasonable for us to expect that a guy like that's going to change his play style? And I think as the preseason has progressed, we've seen that the answer is pretty much yes, in my opinion, at least. Like, it's like you said, I mean, he took 11 shots in the game tonight, which was probably too much. He took probably too many threes, but he has overall looked so much better in terms of moving the ball and trying to get other people involved. And like, he's cut down a little bit on his like stupid pump fake hesitation plays.
Yeah.
A lot more. I'm very happy if he misses, but he just took it in the flow of the offense and didn't do his pump fake, you know, hesitations moves. But yeah, so everyone's looking good. And this is what a real, you know, NBA coach does, right? He makes the sum of the parts greater than each individual piece. And and that's what Luke is doing so far. Not to say that he's at like Greg Popovich level or something like that, but we've been playing so many seasons with a guy. I mean, it was only two, but it felt like 10 with a guy who was taking all of his pieces and making the sum negative. You know what I mean? Because arguably a team without a coach would have won more than we won last year.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to see a positive trend in that direction. And I think it's only going to get stronger as the season progresses and these guys start to learn a little bit more.
Nope. Yeah, for sure. So I can't wait to play meaningful basketball. The next game against the Golden State will be a very interesting one. Yeah. I hope we can not lose by 20, because we haven't done so yet at all this preseason. So if we can just stay in the game somewhat, I will be very pleased and very happy. I'm sure Luke will be motivated to, I don't know, play competitively, and I hope that's what happens. I'm sure the guys are going to be super nervous, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, these guys look up to Golden State, right?
Yeah.
The only thing I'm thinking is, it's also, that game's also in Vegas, right? So they're going to be there in Vegas just like hanging out with all this downtime. It's a Saturday game, so like they're all going to have gone out the night before, like 1,000% sure.
Yeah.
Like Luke is probably going to go out with them, for God's sake. He's only 36, and like all his old Golden State buddies are going to be there. So.
Right.
Yeah, I'm like kind of nervous about the Saturday game because I think it might get out of hand and Steve Kerr might just like a friendly, you know, slap Luke across the face type of maneuver by blowing this out. But I think the next game after that, they'll probably go easier on us, probably.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so that should be fun. With that said, we will wrap it up here. Once again, thank you for listening to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, @ Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because like I said, the more you rate and review us, that cuts off a second off of EG and Leanne's long-ass dialed-up jump shot, which we've seen he can shoot it quickly if he really wants to. So rate and review us on iTunes. All right, Tommy, I'll let you go.
Bye.
Still awake in the mirror counting all of my mistakes. Hang on my shoulders tonight.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.